The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Good morning. This is Andrew Loker filling in for Stephen Fleury. He's traveling with his family down to New Orleans to attend the North American Nationals Irish Dance Championship. And he's down there with many of our other students here from the college campus or the academy here in Edmond, and also some of the young people from over in England. We're really proud of their accomplishments. They've worked hard throughout the year, and this is a great chance for them to show off their skills. I'd like to thank Mr. Fleury for the opportunity to guest host today. I try to listen to the Trumpet Daily radio program every morning, and it's really obviously a very beneficial news source for us. It gives us great understanding. But I will say, until you prepare one of these, it's very easy to overlook the preparation time. So I'm very thankful that he invests the time. He has others that help him, of course. And then all the other programs that are offered on this radio station. It takes a lot of time to prepare all this material, but it, like I said, it's a great source for us to understand the Bible. As Stephen Fleury always does, I too would like to encourage you to send in your comments through email. The email address is td@kpcg.fm. Those are always enlightening to hear and does provide the presenter some valuable feedback. Well, back in March 2016, the FCC in the United States issued a license or gave us license for this low-powered FM station. It's about 15 months ago now. And outside of a few weather problems that we have in the wintertime with ice or some local wildlife, some big birds that like to land on our antenna, which takes us off the air, overall it's been a pretty solid transmission for this station. Locally, we have a great spot on the FM dial. We say it all the time, 101.3, and it really is a favorable location. It's interesting for me to drive around Edmond and listen to our program, and we're right there amongst all the other radio programs that are out there. And it does drive home how powerful this tool really is. It reaches probably half the population of Edmond. It gets into southern Guthrie and does give us access to quite a few people that choose to listen. Dwight Falk, he obviously works on the Trumpet Radio Live program as the main presenter there. He's always looking to expand our coverage, checking up with the FCC, and that's something for us to keep in mind. It would be great to increase our power. We also try to exploit the internet through various websites. You can download our programs. You can stream. We try to make this available to you in any way that we possibly can. So don't forget to keep up with the other programs. We have the Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker and Trumpet Radio Live with Dwight Falk. Of course, we have the Key of David program. And then on our website, we have the Trumpet Talk, which is a new video interview, you could say, with some of the authors of our main articles there. And then, of course, we have the Trumpet Brief, which is an email that comes out to you. Again, all of these tools help us to really stay connected to what's truly important in this world. And it's really a true, non-fake news presentation, and it does give you God's perspective. The radio station is a regular part of our work now. We've had a lot of positive comments from people all over the world. It does unify us, and it helps us to understand what's important. Well, Brad McDonald guest hosted on Wednesday this week, and he's a regular guest host for this program and also appears frequently on the Trumpet Weekly. Well, he kind of stole my introductory thoughts on Wednesday with his introduction. We do live in a very blessed nation, and God has most definitely fulfilled his promise to Abraham to provide us these wonderful material physical blessings. As you might guess, in 1950, the United States ranked highest when you're looking at the gross domestic product per capita. Those were kind of the golden years, you might say, of America. Britain was really thriving and serving the world. But obviously, times have changed. I did a little search on Google to see where the United States ranks today. And I found this article in the Business Insider magazine, and they were quoting a study done by Global Finance magazine. And what they were doing was ranking the world's economies. And I'll just read to you just a quick quote from this article. It says, the magazine ranked the world's countries according to their gross domestic product based on purchasing power parity per capita. So it's a way of kind of leveling the playing field here. Obviously, the huge nations, the Western powers in China, have monstrous economies. But when you factor in inflation, cost of living, and just the population size, it gives you a better representation of the value or the earnings, you could say, per capita in the nations. So in 1950, the United States ranked first, as you would expect. In 2017, we ranked 13th. According to this article from March 2017. And when you look at the number one GDP per capita, it's Qatar, and they have almost twice the per capita that the people enjoy in the United States. There's a lot of non-Israelite countries that dominate the top of the list, and I think you could argue that really the times of the Gentiles is fulfilled even economically. And so on the 4th of July, which probably generated Mr. McDonald's thoughts and comments, I too was just thinking about our national blessings. The 4th of July on public broadcast, or TV, excuse me, on PBS, they have a live program from the nation's capital, and it's all focused obviously on celebrating the 4th of July. I like watching that program every year. It's the best fireworks show. You can watch it right from the comfort of your own home. And they back it with classical music. Our nation just turned 241 years old. And the National Symphony Orchestra, along with a few different bands from the U.S. Army, backed up some of the entertainment of the night and played as the fireworks were going off. They also had a few other artists performing, some country music singers that sang patriotic songs. That was enjoyable. And there was a gospel singer artist who was really excellent. She sang God Bless America, and later she sang the Battle Hymn of the Republic. And as I was watching this program, they, of course, kept coming back to all the people gathered there, thousands of people in the National Mall, enjoying this concert, enjoying the festivities. They were singing along. And as she sang God Bless America, it called back to mind the 9/11 terrorist attack. And if you recall, the congressman after the attack came out on the steps or the front steps of the Capitol building there and spontaneously started to sing God Bless America. And it was really kind of a moving scene because that's so different than what we typically think about with our congressman. Even the recent shooting of Steve Scalise, who incidentally has been deteriorating in his condition and moved back to the intensive care unit. Even that shooting brought a certain unity to Congress and to the press and to the public. It caused all of us to pause just for a moment and think about how radical and divided our society has become. Thinking back to those congressmen singing on the steps, they all seemed to know the words, or at least they lip-synced pretty well. But I wondered how much they really thought about what they were singing. I wonder about all of those people in the National Mall that were singing along with God Bless America. This gospel singer encouraged the crowd to sing along, and again, it looked like many of them knew the words. In Isaiah chapter 10, verse 5, it says, O Assyrian, the rod of mine anger, and the staff in their hand is mine indignation. God is talking about using the Assyrians, as we know. They're the rod of his anger. He uses them to correct. He is indignant with this nation. Verse 6 tells us why. He says, I will send him against a hypocritical nation, and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge to take the spoil, to take the prey, and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. This is personal from God. He's correcting a hypocritical nation. He's going to use foreign powers to do it. He gives them a charge. They come and take the spoil. They enjoy the blessings. Everything seems to be removed from this hypocritical nation. Now, if you look in the dictionary for a definition of the word hypocrite, it tells you something similar to this: a person that puts on a false appearance of virtue or religion. A hypocrite is somebody that pretends to be virtuous, someone that pretends to be religious. A subsequent definition says that their actions often contradict their stated beliefs. So here you have a hypocritical nation, or a group of people that pretend to be virtuous, that put on the pretense of high morality, or that they have these great religious beliefs. They'll sing "God Bless America," and they act as though they really believe it, like they really want it. Well, that gets to the first point in my program today. We do live in a hypocritical nation. I could give you dozens of examples, and I will give you some examples. Perhaps what comes to mind most readily for all of us right now is the media. The contradiction between the liberal, radical left and the conservative media. Hypocrites. Fake news, as is so commonly talked about today. Fake news is another way of saying lying. We're not telling the truth. We're acting virtuous. One side is, and they're bashing the other side for not being as moral as they are. You know, the media has a certain responsibility, whether they want to acknowledge that or not. They, too, were granted a license by the federal government to broadcast, just like KPCG.FM. We have a low-power FM radio license. We're restricted to a very small broadcast circle. We don't reach out there that far over the air with radio. The internet is a huge advantage for us, and it does give us global reach. And we do take our responsibility very seriously. We do make great effort to give you true news. And again, if you look at the contradiction in the media today, they do have a shocking influence on what the public thinks. And they should be more cognizant of their responsibility and take that to heart. But of course, they are just a type of what we see in the nation today. You could argue they help cause the problem. And yet you can't really deny that each individual in this country that's been so blessed does bear some responsibility for the hypocrisy that God condemns us for having. Our effort at thetrumpet.com, our effort at the Philadelphia Church of God, is to counter that hypocrisy. Now, the activists in Congress, another example here, you look at activists in Congress that work to remove God from monuments. They don't like to have God mentioned in our schools. They don't like to refer to religion and leadership. In fact, that's kind of a stigma, or a dark stigma, against someone if they have some type of religious backing. We've had Trumpet Daily radio programs that focus on politicians that have had to resign their political office because it conflicts with them religiously. And yet, when you look at problems in the nation, when you see great tragedy like the September 11th attacks, oftentimes those very congressmen that want to remove God from the picture call to him at their time of crisis. And it is a false worship of God. It's insincere. They don't do what God commands. They don't call upon God in the good times, at least most of them. I am generalizing a bit here, but I don't think you'd argue with me that their religion and their morality in many ways is insincere. Only calling out at a time of crisis is really shameful in so many ways. We take for granted what we've been given in this nation. And I think, honestly, the politicians don't even really know what they're asking for. They're just asking for God to resolve a crisis, to restore their sense of natural world, their sense of peace. But if you think about it from a different perspective, if you're a parent and your child comes to you and shows you attention only at a time of crisis, how much do you value that relationship with your child? It's very unnatural for a family to operate in that type of environment where the interaction between the parents and their children is only at a time of crisis. Really, the majority of the time of family life should be a time of love and appreciation, a time where there is constant communication, and it does help smooth out those difficult times because crises do come. But if we have that right relationship that's consistent, we can weather those storms so much easier. And so on an average day, it's easy for us, it's human nature, to overlook the many blessings that God does provide for us. He has given this nation abundant food. We enjoy some very fine homes, shelter. We enjoy peace. We have democratic freedoms. We have rights. We have a beautiful nation. We're prosperous. We're so blessed. And at the same time that we enjoy all of those many blessings, blessings that we haven't really earned, this nation as a whole disrespects God at the same time that we proclaim our virtue. It's really shameful and disgusting. Stephen Fleury, over the past week or so, has been talking a lot about the United States and Britain and prophecy. He's gone through the blessings and cursings chapters of the Bible, showing how God has given us natural resources, natural protection. If you look at the nations of end time Israel, for the most part, you could argue that they're islands surrounded by oceans of water that provide just natural defense. And yet today, we take things for granted. We spoil and exploit our resources with very little regard for the future. The populace seems to have lost its work ethic. I want to read to you an article here that was in National Review on July 2nd, 2017. After Alabama reinstated food stamp work requirements for able-bodied adults without dependents, the rolls dropped by 85%. It turns out that work requirements work. According to the Alabama Department of Human Resources, between January 1st and May 1st, 13 counties in the Yellowhammer State saw their food stamp rolls drop by a combined 85%. The reason? At the beginning of the year, those 13 counties joined the rest of the state in ending a years-long exemption from work requirements for able-bodied adults without dependents participating in the federal supplement assistance program. So in other words, the state of Alabama is saying, if you don't have any children and you're of fit condition physically and mentally, if you're able to work and you don't have those dependents, you cannot qualify for food stamps unless you're exerting some type of effort to work. And when they put those requirements in place, 85% of the current recipients of the SNAP program or food stamps, 85% of them failed to qualify. This article continues, able-bodied SNAP participants can receive no more than 3 months of benefits in a three-year period unless they are working or participating in an improved training program for at least 20 hours a week. This requirement is regularly characterized as harsh by critics who point to areas that face persistently lousy labor markets. And so, of course, the critics come out and say, well, it's unfair to put these harsh requirements on a population. They should just have these free handouts. And yet, if you look at the state budgets, if you look at the national budget, we are grossly, grossly in debt. We're handing out money that we don't have. Is it harsh to ask people to carry their own weight, to carry their own responsibility? On June 2nd in thetrumpet.com, David Vahil, one of our staff writers, wrote an article entitled, "Can Trump's Budget Fix America's Spending Problem?" Partway down the article, he says, "Yet the Trump administration says the cuts are necessary to get control of U.S. spending. For example, food stamps have grown from an $18 billion program in 2000, so $18 billion, to a $71 billion program today. 17 years pass, and we have almost a fourfold increase in food stamp programs." He continues, "Social Security disability insurance costs have grown from $56 billion to $144 billion this year. Medicaid's costs have soared from $118 billion to $389 billion. You see the trend. In less than two decades, we're seeing just a magnificent increase in the amount of money spent on social welfare programs. Now, I'll come back to this point a little later in the program, but Mr. Vahil also says that the Homeland Security is asking for a 10% increase in the Department of Defense budget from $521 billion. And I guess I don't have what they're asking for. But anyway, a 10% increase in Department of Defense spending. David Vahil says, so the biggest spenders of American taxpayer money, the military, Medicare, and Social Security, do not see any cuts under this proposed plan. And that's really the irony of this nation. The areas where we could cut and make the most substantial impact are often left untouched, or their programs are expanded because critics think it's just too hard to demand that people pull their own weight. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10 says, for even when we were with you, this we commanded you. This was church authority talking to the brethren. He said that if any would not work, neither should he eat. That's written in God's Bible. If you're not willing to work, you really don't deserve to eat. Now, of course, there's provision for those that cannot work. But the overwhelming majority, as the state of Alabama proved, can work. And when they're required to work, it creates a massive impact on social programs. Now, carrying on in that passage in 2 Thessalonians, where Paul said, if you don't work, then you shouldn't eat, think of the consequence for those that don't work. Verse 11 says, for we hear that there are some which are walking among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. That's the consequence of not working. Laziness, busybodies, being critical, protesting, disorderly. Verse 12 says, now them that are such, we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ that with quietness they work and eat their own bread. Verse 12 there talks about we exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ, or with the authority of Christ. The church's position is you keep your mouth closed, you work, and you eat your own bread. Stay out of the protesting. Contribute to the overall well-being of your nation or your family or your church. It got me thinking about some of the homeless and the panhandlers, as they're often called, beggars, that appear on the streets more frequently. And you see it all over the world. And oftentimes I wonder if they really are homeless, and I'm not alone in that. The Telegraph from the UK ran this article back in June 2015. They said a police survey finds just 1 in 10 beggars are homeless. 10% of them, by their research, by their experience, only 10% truly are homeless. It says officers in Nottingham say some of those supposedly living on the streets own their own homes. They not only have a place to live, they own their homes. They find it more profitable to beg, to take, than to give and contribute. Our once proud nations, hardworking nations, they're losing sight of what it takes to be great so that we can enjoy the standard of living, so that we can share and give that prosperity to the world. That's why it was given to us. When I was watching that PBS program, I also flipped to another network, and they were carrying a live broadcast of the fireworks displays in New York City. So here we have really the economic capital of America, and you have the political capital of America, and thousands of people celebrating, patriotic music playing. They're dressed, wearing flags and all kinds of crazy outfits. And you saw a lot of families together, again, singing, being joined together. And the irony is, this is a bitterly divided nation. For example, on the night of the celebration in New York, as you're well aware, an 11-year veteran, a female police officer of the New York City Police Department, was assassinated. The same night of that celebration, the police had to deploy thousands of officers to maintain order as we celebrate the blessings. As was brought out in the news at the top of the hour, 20,000 officers deployed in Germany to protect infrastructure in Germany as the protesters tear things apart. Getting back to the shooting of the police officer in New York, as Fox News ran this article on July 5th. The title is Police Officer Deaths on Duty Have Jumped Nearly 20% in 2017. The article says the latest in a growing number of officer deaths in 2017 is up 18% from this time last year. A total of 67 officers have died so far this year, according to the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. It found there were 57 officer deaths between January 1st and July 5th, 2016. So we've gone from 57 deaths of police officers up to 67 this year, 18% increase. They said, in addition, gun-related deaths have risen by 9%, up from 22 to 24 in 2017. The figures show a grim trend. 2016 was the deadliest year for police in 5 years. A total of 135 officers died last year. They quote a spokesman here for the Blue Lives Matter group, and he's talking about Officer Familia's killing is a symptom of growing violence against law enforcement. He said last year, in 2016, approximately 50,000 law enforcement officers were assaulted. That ran the gamut from being pushed over to shooting them and causing disabling injuries. 50,000 acts of aggression last year alone against police officers. Yeah, some of it might be an innocent push. Some of it might be an insult or a punch. And some of it is shooting. And we're seeing an increasing trend in execution of somebody that's made their life's commitment, their career, to protect and to serve the community. Now, obviously, they're not all innocent. They, too, have human nature. But really, if you look at their occupation and their service, should they be targets of assassination? The spokesman said, part of the war on cops is the failure of police leadership to step up and place and not acquiesce to political considerations when it comes to safety of police officers. The other part of the war on cops is the failure of the media to post anything positive about the police. And isn't that true? Again, we get back to this hypocritical nation that goes on broadcast and purports that they're so moral. They have such great virtue, and yet they denigrate the police officers. They call to attention any little mistake they make, or maybe a big mistake. But you don't see a lot of reports about the good things that they do. They are affecting the general population, and you can't deny the statistics. 24 police officers killed with guns this year alone. 4 of them assassinated, execution style. ABC News reported, I think, just a couple days ago, that 1/3 of all police officer deaths come as a result of assassination. Now, it's not just in New York City that we have these social problems. Obviously, Chicago comes to mind. One of my friends passed along an article. It's actually a link to a certain page on the Chicago Tribune's website. And when you go there, you can get a live tracking map and statistics for violence in that city. It's updated every week. And so this page shows the number of shootings or the shooting victims per day. So far in 2017, 1,871 victims of shooting violence in Chicago. 1,871 people so far this year have been a victim of shooting. If you average that out, that's more than 10 per day. 10 shootings per day. Now, surprisingly, that's actually a decrease from last year. January 1st through July 5th, 2016, saw 2,061 shooting victims in Chicago. 11.5 per day on average. That is incredible to think about. You would imagine that if you were a police officer and you get a call that there's been gunfire and there's a shooting victim, that would raise your adrenaline, that it would be something that would be very urgent. And yet, surely it doesn't have that reaction anymore among the officers. They don't have that reaction. 11 a day, well, it's just business as usual. Wonder where it's going to be today. God has commissioned this work, and Gerald Fleury in particular, to address these issues, to talk to this hypocritical nation. God is going to correct us. He's already started, starting. And he's sending Gerald Fleury right to that war-torn city of Chicago. He's going to give two public Bible lectures. We call them personal appearance campaigns, and this takes place in a few weeks. I'll quote to you from a letter he sent to subscribers. He said, "My Sunday night lecture will be entitled Great Hope in Bible Prophecy. The Monday night lecture will be entitled God's Master Plan for You Personally. These two messages will give you important understanding in these troubling times." So you find this man of God going to Chicago, right there at the core of the problem, perhaps the most violent city in the United States. And God sends his watchman there to warn them and to give them hope and to explain that God does have a plan that applies directly to them. We sent out these invitations to people that lived within 100 miles of the venue where we're going to have these lectures, just 100 miles. And they had to be active subscribers to our magazine, ordering literature, that type of thing. We wanted to make sure that those that come are interested in this work. We have 510 people that have requested tickets to attend the first night. And the second night, I think it's just over 400 now. And what I think is really inspiring is 85% of those that will come to these campaigns do not attend services with our church right now. So the overwhelming majority of the attendees will be Trumpet subscribers, those that consume our material on a somewhat regular basis, but they're not attending with us. 23% of those that have registered to attend, 23% have contributed financially to the church. Now, we don't use that as any type of requirement, but I do think that that statistic shows you that they are somewhat committed. Of course, all of our literature, all of our materials, everything we do is provided as a public service, free of charge. We don't follow up. We don't request money. We don't track donors. We don't solicit funds. We don't do anything like that. And so those that do consume our materials and contribute financially, I think you could argue are more serious about what we're doing. And so we're excited to see the impact of this appearance campaign there with Gerald Fleury. Again, right there at the heart and core. So how did we get so many people to invite? Well, Chicago is a very interesting market for us. We use a daily television program to cover the population of Chicago and Gary, Indiana, the surrounding areas. And it's really been a very inspiring station for us, or a very productive station, let me say it that way. It's an independent station. And the way they broadcast with digital television technology now, each station is allocated basically four different subcarriers or four channels per station. So you have channel 26.1, 26.2, 26.3, and so on. Well, we're on a secondary transponder, a secondary channel of this independent station. We've been on that station since December 2011. The station call letters are WCUU, it's channel 26.2. And in the roughly 6 years, five and a half, 6 years that we've been on there, we've received more than 21,500 requests for literature, almost all of them being phone calls coming in each day from Chicago as we carry the message to that city. We have another station there, the primary channel there, 26.1. Again, it's a different station. We've been on that station for about 15 years now. And that station alone in Chicago, the broadcast reaches primarily Chicago, that station alone receives almost as much response as we used to get on WGN, which was a national station. Really tremendous response out of the city of Chicago. And I think you could argue that if you look at the population that's subject to such violence, so many problems, where trouble is very apparent, we find that more people are responding to God's message. And that's exactly what God wants. Chicago, you might argue, is a microcosm of this nation. And Chicago is going bankrupt. They're filled with violence. All of these problems. And it's indicative of what's happening to this entire country. I think that's also a good indication that we'll see more response to our warning message. Again, that's God's whole purpose of correcting, is to turn his people back to him. Now, we recently went off WGN, if you're a regular watcher of that program, and we did so because our response was declining on that particular network. Again, that's a nationwide cable network. And for a lot of different reasons, we've seen our response decline there. There's a principle over in Matthew 10. I won't go there for sake of time. But it talks about that God sends his message from city to city. And if a house be worthy, as it says in Matthew 10, verse 13, let your peace come upon it. But if it be not worthy, let your peace return unto you. In other words, move on. Talking about going into a city, and if you're well received, well, stay there and carry the message. But if that city is too harsh or too unresponsive, then you move on. And that's exactly what we've done with WGN. We've found that it's not as responsive. And so the money was reinvested in more than 20 different stations that broadcast over the air all over the nation. Now, again, Chicago is violent. I'm sure you heard that over 100 people were shot in Chicago over the 4th of July weekend. It was just another wave of violence typical for Chicago. 100 people shot. They said at least 14 of the gunshot victims died. This is a USA Today article. 14 shooting deaths in Chicago over this celebration of our nation's independence. This article says the Chicago Tribune and other local media say that at least 101 people were shot between 3 p.m. Friday and 6 a.m. Wednesday. So it's a little bit longer weekend. And of course, you have a critic here that says anytime you have people shot and killed, it's difficult, he says. I can't say this weekend was more difficult than any other. And it's a little unfair. Does 5 days count as a weekend? Really, is that the way we're going to look at violence in Chicago? If we say 100 people plus were shot over the weekend, but well, it's actually not just a weekend, it's a couple extra days. Shouldn't that still alarm us? 14 people died. 14 people's families are forever changed. As this nation celebrates with fireworks, music, and family time, there is another reality, isn't there? Shootings, massive violence. There's a cause for this, as we talk about so frequently in all of our messages. John 8, verse 44 says, you are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. Right? He's a hypocrite. He's out there promoting peace, peace, when there's terrible violence. And Christ condemned that society. He told them, look, you're just acting like your father. The lusts of your father, the thing that Satan really loves to do, to murder, to lie, to be a hypocrite. Well, that's what you're doing. That's what's causing our societal problems. Ephesians chapter 2, again quoted often, talks about that those of us called to this truth used to conduct our lives that way. We're all affected by the broadcast of the prince of the power of the air, Satan the devil. He's working, actively working in children of disobedience. And so we see people snap. We see hypocrisy and lying and violence. Our nation is falling apart. Our religions are failing to help us through these difficult times. There are broken homes, broken families. And again, if you look to church, not this church, if you look to church for solutions, there are no solutions there. You probably saw the terrible story about what's going on with some of the Vatican's officials with some terrible sexual sins. There's a new law in Oregon that's about to pass through the state. The governor still has to sign it, but basically it provides free abortions for anybody at any time. It doesn't matter if you can afford it or not. It's free. The insurance providers have to pay, and they cannot charge deductibles. They cannot apply co-payments. Free abortion. And as the commentator that I heard delivering this story yesterday talk about, he said it's a political statement. It doesn't have to do with the health and well-being of the pregnant lady. It's a political statement. Free abortion. No consequence for violating God's laws. I found another terrible statistic from the CDC, or the Center for Disease. Oh, I should have written that down. Anyway, you know what the CDC is. They report that 110 million Americans at any given point in time have a sexually transmitted disease. 110 million Americans. That's more than one in three Americans are suffering from a disease, a sexually transmitted disease. Now, if you subtract out children from that number, that's almost 40% of the population is suffering from a sexually transmitted disease. Our families are breaking down. Again, we talk about our high moral values, how virtuous we are, how religious we are, church attendance. And yet, if you look at the reality, it's very easy to understand why God says we are a hypocritical nation. Well, I'll take a short break here and we'll return with more of this message.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. The United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
The Trumpet Daily.
Well, I over-prepared for this presentation, so I'm going to skip through this next section pretty quickly. Still carrying on with the same theme, but looking at it from perhaps a slightly different light. The 4th of July also marks a time when we celebrate our nation's military. It's a very bright, shiny, technologically advanced infrastructure. Over a million servicemen and women in the United States Army alone. It's a time, the 4th of July is a time when we, again, use fireworks. We highlight our national monuments. We celebrate the achievements and the service of those that have been part of our military over the years. We have many veterans in the local church area. We have many veterans that in the local community, and we're very thankful for their service and what they've given. In Hosea 5, verse 11, it says, Ephraim is oppressed and broken in judgment because he willingly walked after the commandment. Therefore, God says, will I be unto Ephraim as a moth and to the house of Judah as rottenness. This applies to Ephraim or Britain, but you also can argue it carries over to the United States. And there's a problem. In the Hosea booklet written by Gerald Fleury, he says, shows that England's oppression is coming because the people willingly walked after the commandment. This phrase refers to following the commandment of Jeroboam, who led the nation into great idolatry. It was Jeroboam who accepted pagan religious holidays and rejected God's holy days. Because England and other Israelitish nations have followed these traditions, they will suffer as never before. In verse 12, God says he will be like a moth to England and to Judah as rottenness. It is God who will bring these nations down. Moths destroy clothing. A moth-eaten garment looks good in the closet, but take it off the hanger and it just falls apart. God says Britain is like a moth-eaten garment, and Judah is infested with maggots. Even though certain things may look good on the surface, these two nations are ready to fall apart. End quote. It's just another way of talking about the consequences of being hypocritical. We can look good on the outside. Our military can look intimidating. It can look like a tremendous power. And yet it's filled with rottenness, not necessarily the people, although you could talk about that in a different way. But I'm talking about our hardware, our military equipment. We've drawn attention to this in the past, and so again, I'll skip through this pretty quickly. President Trump, as I read from the Trumpet article of David Vahil, June 2nd, if you want to go back and look at that, President Trump is requesting 10% increase in military spending, and that is going to apparently start to address our nation's military infrastructure failings. And yet, if you think about how long it takes for those investments to really make a difference, you wonder if there is going to be time left to see any consequence or any recovery. And obviously, I think the answer is no. I was going to read to you an article from military.com from a few days ago, and it's kind of cataloging the life of Lieutenant General John Dog Davis. He's going to retire in July. He's presided over the Marine Corps Aviation Unit for the last several years. And he's talking about how everything's falling apart. The average Marine Corps pilot flies 16 hours of training per month. 16 hours per month of training. They can't fly anymore because the planes don't work. As we pointed out before, they've gone to what they call the boneyard or the graveyard, where they retire old military equipment because it's just not worth fixing. They've had to go to those locations to take parts off old decrepit planes to try to maintain our current fleet. The pilots aren't getting enough training. They've been in combat for 15 years. The equipment's wearing out. And then those pilots and mechanics that are trained, that do provide a great service, well, they're being poached by the private sector, the commercial airlines. And so we're drawing down the quality of our military infrastructure and not really being able to replace it with anything else. This article I wanted to draw attention to from Popular Science. This is from January 2017. They say this year the U.S. Navy will add 9 ships to the battle force as it slowly grows toward a 300-ship fleet. Most likely, these new ships are a sign of things to come as President-elect Donald Trump campaigned on a promise to boost the Navy to 350 ships. Now, again, he's obviously elected, and they are putting more money in there. And so they talk about these 9 ships that they're adding. One is an aircraft carrier, 2 destroyers, 2 nuclear attack submarines, and 4 littoral combat ships. The aircraft carrier is really a big splash. It's the first new aircraft carrier to be commissioned in the Navy in the last 8 years. It's the USS Gerald R. Ford, and it's a technologically advanced carrier. It functions differently than the previous models. They say construction began in 2005, but technical problems the Navy blames on brand new ship design pushed it behind schedule and over budget. The Ford has incurred an estimated $3.2 billion cost in overrun and was originally set to be commissioned in 2014, 3 years ago. Now, as of today, it's due to be commissioned 15 days from now. So toward the end of July, they're hoping to finally get the Ford released out there for service. But there's a problem. the moths have already gotten to our brand new equipment. This is from BreakingDefense.com, October 2016. It says the $13 billion supercarrier USS Ford and the $500 million littoral combat ships are both suffering engine trouble. But Navy Secretary Ray Mabus took pains today to defend the littoral combat ships, even as he derided Ford as a textbook example of how not to build a ship. I won't take time to go through all of this, but basically the problem is the catapult system doesn't work on the carrier like it's supposed to. It's not strong enough. So we're spending billions of dollars. We're falling further and further behind. And when we finally do put out the new equipment, it's defective. It's not just in the Navy. We've spoken about the Joint Strike Fighter. The F-35 has its problems. The F-22 Raptor has its problems, cost overruns. Again, more expensive and less effective. The United States Air Force is releasing its new drone fleet. And they're doing these drones. They're less expensive. But again, you're taking the teeth really out of our military, you might argue. Now, I I'll move through this pretty quickly. Our nation, as I said, celebrated 241 history. I found an interesting statistic, and I don't know, well, I saw a lot to support this, but they said basically only 15 to 20 of our 241 years has been without war. We've been at war as a nation almost from the beginning, and with few exceptions where there has been relative peace, we've been fighting war. And what we're finding now is that our nation is not equipped to fight war any longer. I want to finish today's program by quoting to you from yesterday's trumpet brief, what I would call a bombshell trumpet brief. Joel Hilliker wrote this up yesterday, and it's just really something you need to go back and look at. He's quoting President Donald Trump and the speech he gave in Warsaw, Poland yesterday. The trumpet brief says, "Dear subscriber, quote, the fundamental question of our time is whether the West has the will to survive." That was a statement made by President Donald Trump, and it's so true. That is the pressing question. Do we have the will to survive? We have our shiny equipment. We have all of our supposed morals and virtues, but are we willing to fight to survive and to preserve those values? Mr. Hilliker says he decried the threats from within and abroad. President Trump said forces that threaten over time to undermine our values and erase the bonds of culture, faith, and tradition. That's what we're fighting. There are forces out there that are attacking our values, the bonds of culture, faith, and tradition. All of that is under attack. He said, we have to remember that our defense is not just a commitment of money, it is a commitment of will. Later, he said, do we have the confidence in our values to defend them at any cost? Do we have enough respect for our citizens to protect our borders? Do we have the desire and the courage to protect our civilization in the face of those who would subvert and destroy it? We can have the largest economies and the most lethal weapons anywhere on earth. But if we do not have strong families and strong values, then we will be weak and we will not survive. Now, sadly, that's an amazing speech. And again, I wonder who really believes that in this country. Amazing speech. And yet he finished up by saying that the West will prevail. And that's contrary to what the Bible says. You see, we've crossed the point of no return as a nation. This nation is hypocritical from the head to the foot. The difference is in this church is that God commands us, and we listen to his command, to be sincere, to be truthful. We listen to our God that tells us not to be hypocritical, but to live by the way of give. This work, the work of KPCG.FM, the work of thetrumpet.com, the Philadelphia Church of God as a whole, with Gerald Fleury leading the way with the Key of David program, his articles and all of the writings, all of it is a warning from God that he's correcting this nation in love. God wants us to celebrate national unity, not necessarily independence. God wants us to come together to sing and to dance in sincerity, not with hypocrisy. God wants us to have high moral standards. He wants us to be a religious, virtuous people. And that's what we practice here in the Philadelphia Church of God. And that's why our media is so successful. So make sure you tune in, that you listen, and that we apply the Bible recipe to be successful, that we take our responsibilities seriously, and that we strive to promote this wonderful, wonderful, blessed nation that God wants us to be. It's been great to be with you. I'd like to thank Stephen Fleury again for this opportunity, and hope you have a great weekend to meditate on everything that's taken place this week.